It's always good to have the opportunity to speak on a topic that normally I wouldn't get the opportunity to speak on. I've been asked to speak about literature and things relating to it, probably because of Bridgeway Publications and my association with a ministry that is providing biblical resources to Christians in needy countries. But I want to speak wider than that. I want to emphasize the need for vernacular editions, vernacular translations of the Bible, and vernacular writings of Christian materials. Now, I am involved in sending out books, and the books that we send out are all in English, because, as we all know, English is the nearest thing the world has ever had, if you'll excuse the story about the Tower of Babel. But looking in general terms at the world in which we live is the nearest thing we've seen to a worldwide language. Everybody, it seems, wants to learn English. Some countries that used to have French as a second language have now changed to English as a second language, which doesn't please the French very much, but it shows how English has become dominant across the world. Everybody, everywhere, seems to want to learn it. If you want access into a country, you can get into almost any country in the world if you know how to teach English as a second language, or if you have any skills in IT, technology, or health services, education, and things like that that people are all looking for. My books, originally, well, I wrote them in Thai, as you probably are well aware. Didn't go to Thailand intending to write books. We went in Thailand intending to evangelize and plant a church in a place where there was none previously. That is, in an area of Bangkok that we staked out. And we worked through there, seeking to plant a church in a vast district of that city where there was no Christian testimony whatsoever. But it was in the process of doing that that I discovered there was very little literature available in the Thai language. So I wrote a few things myself, and a few things grew to a few more things. Now, they're not perfect, and one would hope that at least they have given a base from which other people may work. So if you want a Bible commentary or a Bible dictionary in Thai, it doesn't matter if you're a Catholic or a Protestant or whatever you are, you either take mine or take none, because it is the only Bible commentary, the only Bible dictionary available. But I hoped that once we have laid some sort of base or given foundation materials, then local writers might develop. And local writers are developing to write material that would be better for the local populace. Other material is translated from English into other languages. Well, again, that is okay when you don't have much choice. You've got to start somewhere. But it is by no means the best way of going about things. When we come to the Bible, it's got to be a translation because the original was in Hebrew and Greek. So we are looking for people who know how to translate. Originally, many of the translations were done by missionaries or other well-meaning people. Most of them are very deficient. They've served their purpose, and many of them have been revised. I know when I first went to Thailand, the initial translation of the Thai Bible had been around for a very, very long time, but it had been revised extensively and was released during the 60s. It's an excellent translation. Some traditionalists didn't like things being different from the version that they had grown up with. But I think after a while everybody realized that this was indeed a very good translation. And anybody who is a Bible student and who knows a little bit about Bible studies and original languages will realize what a good job they've done. All around the world, people are working in translations to get the Bible into local languages. Some of these are initial translations, some of them are revisions, and then of course you have audio ministries to places where there is no written script, and then people who are working to reduce languages to a written script so that material can be produced. There's a whole range of ministries out there. But I am particularly interested in getting vernacular translations. And by vernacular translations, I mean translations into the heart language of the people. Now, any Bibles that you send overseas will be appreciated. You can send English language Bibles and people will read them. But there's nothing like reading something in your heart language. Now, just take a case here. Not many of us are competent in any language at all other than English. But just suppose there are a few of us here who could read, let us say, French or Italian or Spanish or German, something like that. Okay, we could read it and maybe we could understand it, but it wouldn't really be the same as reading it in your own language. You'd stumble around and you'd really miss the underlying life and vitality of what you're reading. Well, so it is with people in these other countries. Sure, they can get by with English because they're far more competent at languages than we are. Australians and British and Americans are among the most incompetent at language. Most of the European countries, for example, people there can speak more than one language. In fact, in most countries of the world, people can speak more than one language. But we here can only speak English, largely. And when it comes to learning other languages, we're not nearly as good at that as are people from other countries. Countries of Asia, Africa, Latin America, they seem to be far more adept at learning foreign languages. These people in these other countries, they can read in English, or they can read in French, or in Spanish, or in Portuguese, or in some other language that has been imposed upon them by colonial powers. They can get through these foreign languages tolerably well, but they'd much rather read in their own language. Nothing can compare with their own vernacular tongue. And as you get out of the main population centres, it becomes even more important to have vernacular translations for these people. Now, once the vernacular translation is available, or once biblical resource material is available in the local languages, the local people are going to become far more independent. Now, that is a good thing, but I must confess that not all missionaries would see it that way. I suspect that some missionaries are quite happy to see things the way they are because they are still the expert, so to speak. If people do not have material in their own language, when they come to difficulties, they consult the person who they think has the knowledge, and that may be the foreign missionaries, but their channel of information is now coming from one person. So the missionary has a false power, a false authority, a false control over what the people are learning. If they have material in their own language, they can consult, they can question each one of them individually, and they're more likely to come to their independent views and mature accordingly. So they can interpret the Bible. We must be very careful of imposing rules upon Christians. I've met Christians in some countries where missionaries have imposed rules upon them, what they can and cannot do, but the people have never found this out themselves from the Bible. There might be behavioural issues, or there could be matters in the church. I remember a case of a fellow in Thailand, one of the fellows in our church. He came to me one day and he said, "You know, it's wrong for a Christian to consult a fortune teller." And I said, "Yes, yes, yes." He said, "Yes, it's in the Bible." And I'm trying to think to myself, yeah, where does it say that in the Bible? Trying to rush around and find a verse. But he had already found it. He'd found a term in the Thai Bible that covered that kind of activity. Now, consulting fortune tellers is a bit of a fun thing to do in Thailand. It's a bit like buying a scratchy and seeing if you've won a prize. And so, for a nominal fee, let us say 10 cents, you can get your fortune told. It's about as reliable as consulting the stars in the local newspaper. But people do it for fun or for kicks. And then he saw this expression in the Bible. I think it was in Galatians 5 about the works of the flesh. And there it was that this kind of activity was a work of the flesh. He saw it for himself. And that was the end of it. I could have gone to any of these Christians and say, "No, you're all Christians, you've got to stop consulting fortune tellers." And so, like a schoolmaster laying down the law, I could impose my views upon them. But we didn't do that. We didn't say, "Look, you're Christians now, you've got to stop drinking, smoking, swearing, gambling, consulting fortune tellers." Don't do that. You're Christians now, let's get into the Bible and study it. And because we had a good translation in Thai, they're able to study the Bible. get a little bit of help from some books that are written to guide them as to who's talking to whom and what the background might have been and things like that. But it's the Word of God that is coming through, and it's the Word of God that is penetrating, and they're seeing it for themselves. And when they see it for themselves, it has an enormous impact. Instead of doing something because it's been stamped upon them, imposed upon them by some authoritarian figure, they see it for themselves and what a difference it makes. Let us get as much energy, as much funding, as much attention as possible into this issue of vernacular translations. Now, it will diminish the missionary's power base. Case I just mentioned of myself. You plant a church in Bangkok, but you don't want to own the church. You don't want to have a power base there that runs the show according to your particular fancy, doing the things you want to do. We have to adopt the language and the culture when we go into a country if we're going to transmit the message properly. But we, I'm talking now about Western missionaries or people with linguistic skills who can go in to get the Bible from Hebrew and Greek into some of these other languages, we have to be converted before we can convert others. That is, we have to be converted to the ethos, to the driving forces of that culture. We have to understand what's going on. We have to be enculturated. We have to be saturated with the language. The only way you understand a culture is through its language. The only way you understand a language is through its culture. This is necessary if we are to produce a version of the Bible that is going to grab people when they read it. What we're trying to do is strengthen the independence of the local Christians. Now, we all know that missionaries have said for a long time, our aim is to work ourselves out of a job, which sounds very noble, and it's a good ideal to have. But in practice, it often doesn't work out that way, because we all know that when we've started something, it tends to become our baby. We like things to be done our way, and we are a bit reluctant sometimes to let it go. I'm saying, let us go in there and do all we can to make these people independent, so that every person has the opportunity. All the Christians. Now, I've never worked in a country of illiteracy. If I did, I imagine that one of the high priorities I would have is to help people become literate so that they can read the Bible for themselves, they can read other things for themselves, and in that way they are going to grow. I've been to various countries where there has been a great paucity of locally available material in vernacular languages. I've been to other countries where there's been plenty of it. Some of the countries that stand out, one of them is Tanzania, where German missionaries made it a goal. These were from CMML in Germany, and they have always made it a goal, not just in Tanzania, but I've seen the same thing in Pakistan, where the chief literature producer for that country, Catholic, Protestant, anything else, is an organization set up by some of these people from Germany. They've done the same in Tanzania. And people from other missions and from other groups have paid tribute to them and said, you've done what we failed to do. So wherever they go in, they make sure they're all linguistically competent and they work in the local language, and they have a brilliant strategy to get local churches independent, functioning on their own without having to consult the imported missionary all the time. But one of the reasons they're able to do that is that they've always put a high priority on getting biblical resource material. Firstly, get the Bible, then get things like Bible commentaries, Bible dictionaries, concordances, reference material where local people can go and ferret around for themselves. Papua New Guinea is another place where the missionaries have helped to get the local churches independent more quickly by getting resource material into their hands. There are a lot of publishing operations going on in India, very similar. But then I've been to some countries in Africa where there seems to be a great lack. I was in one particular country. I'd given a number of talks there. A number of people had my books in English. Unfortunately, none of them were in the local language. And in the question session that came at the end, one woman stood up and she said, why haven't we got these materials in our language? She mentioned the particular language it was. And I was a bit embarrassed, because churches have been planted by missionaries well over 100 years previously in this particular region. And here they were 100 years further on, they had no resources in their own language. So I tried to be as diplomatic as I could in saying, well, yes, I could see her point, that I hadn't been there and I wasn't a permanent resident of that country and I didn't have any say in how the church developed or what things were done. But I agreed with her that it was an urgent need. Christians ought to have these kinds of materials. So she responded and she said, see, I can speak English. But she said, all these other people around me, half of them can't speak English. And a lot, many of these women here, she said, they can't read anything. Why haven't people taught us to read? Why haven't they given us material in our own language? Good question. And as I say, I was unable to give a satisfactory answer. I didn't want to be too judgmental on other people who'd done some very good things. Let us be careful in our comments here, because they had set up schools, they had set up hospitals, they had provided welfare ministries, they had done good things, they had planted churches, but they have not produced resource material that would enable local gift to develop and mature. I don't know why that was. It may have just been an oversight. It may have been the people responsible didn't have the necessary gifts. Or it could have been that they realised it's dangerous to let the people loose with their own material where you aren't the source of reference the whole time. You aren't the one they consult. Once they're independent, they can do their own thing. So it should be. One of the dangers of importing material, such as I mentioned, like English or whatever, is that it conveys the impression that somehow we are the superior ones, we are the Bible scholars, we are the ones with better knowledge, and the material is coming from a better culture. Well, it isn't. Okay, some of us may have gifts that we can utilize to help other people, but a lot of the material that's coming from the West is tainted. It's tainted by this cancer that is eating away in Western society. Our culture is sick. And a lot of the Christian material that's being churned out is very tainted by values of secularism, secular humanism, and other unsavoury things. It's dished up in pulpits of conservative churches all over Australia. Often it's just ordinary secular humanism with a few biblical texts thrown around the edges to make it look Christian, but the underlying core is not Christian at all. It's basically Christo-paganism, Christo-secularism. We're worried about other countries having a sort of Christo-paganism. What we've got is a Christo-secularism. We see those other countries' paganism and they slap on a Christian veneer around the outside. Here we've got secularism slap on a Christian veneer around the outside. But the fundamental problem is the same. Christo-paganism in one place, Christo-secularism in another place. We have to be very careful that we don't export the disease from here into other countries. That's why I think it's better if we can get as much basic resource material, factual material, based on the text of the scriptures, things that's going to expound the Hebrew or the Greek, as I say, dictionaries, commentaries, concordances, things of that nature, and then let the local people, as best they can, develop out of that. And let the writings of practical Christianity and practical instruction, let them come as much as possible from the local context. Where the vernacular translations are strong, you'll normally find there a fairly strong church. I've mentioned Tanzania, I could mention Chad, I could mention Angola and other places where strong churches have grown up. They've got a lot of initiative, a lot of independence, not in the horrible sense of thumbing their nose at any help from outside, but in the sense that they are not dependent upon people from outside. They are up and running, and they show so much initiative, these people. They put us to shame with the strategic planning, with the initiatives, with the insight, with the drive that they have to move out village after village, area after area, evangelizing, planting churches, and seeking to build people up in the faith. So the more writers they can produce, the better. But the writers have got to start somewhere. They've got to have some sort of material to help them. So let us do what we can, especially with these vernacular translations. I have a friend in Nigeria He's a man who's highly qualified. He's got a PhD that would enable him to be a lecturer in lofty institutions just about any place in the world. He's got good English, and he's in an area of Nigeria. He's totally committed to getting the Bible into the heart language of the peoples. He has translated a number of my books, especially the Basic Christianity series, which are designed for non-Christians or new Christians, just to get them started. He's supervised or done the work himself in about 8 or 9 languages in that part of Nigeria. And then he started on some commentaries. He works in the most frightfully poor circumstances. You would not believe the poverty of the region and the clapped out circumstances in which this man lives. Amazing. As I say, he could be lecturing in a university somewhere, but there he is, struggling on. He translated the 4 Gospels, my book on the 4 Gospels. He's just got a little office there attached to our dirt floor, scungy little place. He was away evangelizing somewhere, and one of the local Christians came in and they decided they'd tidy up. And in the process, they threw out all his hard work, handwritten manuscript of the 4 Gospels, that he got to the stage where they could now sit down and type it. So he lost the whole thing. So he went back and he started again. And this time he had a computer. It was one of the things we bought him. We got an aid operation going, and we help people in poor countries with all sorts of things. And one of the things we try to help with is computers. So he got this computer, and now he's able to put this into computer. He got it the second time, and something went wrong, and the computer crashed, and he lost the whole lot. I don't know what went wrong, but I've been in some of these countries, and you can understand sometimes how computers come out badly when they have a conflict with the person who's using them. The first thing they do often is get out a screwdriver, which of course is the last thing you do. You normally get somebody who knows what he's doing, they rattle around the keyboard, and they solve the problem. But people think it's a piece of machinery, like a typewriter or something like that, and so out comes a screwdriver, and they go fishing around inside to see what's gone wrong, and of course the computer gets ruined. So that's the second time. I said, did you have a backup? No, he didn't have a backup. We in this country have caution built into our system. We are very cautious. We cover all the bases. We're insured. We don't like to take risks. You go to these other countries, and it's the other way. They don't have caution built into the system. They don't have insurance policies for everything. They take risks far more than we would, and they don't think of what might be if something goes wrong. Well, something did go wrong, and he lost all the material for a second time. Undaunted, he went back and he did it a third time and finally got the volume published. This time he was backing up his material. Those sorts of stories, it's a little bit by the way, I suppose, but he's trying to get material in vernacular language into the hands of the people. Now, he's been working on the Agatu Bible for a long time. He's actually now finished, with the help of others, the entire Agatu Bible. They've now got the problem of trying to get it published. And as I say, he's translated or looked after the translation of my books into 8 or 9 languages around there. But he keeps on saying, Christians have the right to hear the message, to read the word in their heart language. When he prints some of these Basic Christianity books, as you know, they're very small, they're only 24 pages each. He takes those Basic Christianity booklets around and he tries to sell them. Yeah, he tries to sell them for the equivalent of about 2 cents. And sometimes he says they can't afford it. Some people have bought on credit. Would you believe it? 5 books at 2 cents each, 10 cents. Can we buy them on credit, and at the end of the harvest they can come and pay him? He said there's such a shortage of Bibles. He tries to buy as many Bibles as he can in the local language. I'm thinking now of this particular story in the Tiv language, which is another language of his area. He says 6 people share the same Bible. We have another case of 3 churches where there's only the 1 Bible between the 3 churches. The pastor will have the set of Bridgeway books and the Bible for, I forget how it works, I think it's 2 weeks. And then he passes the package on to the other fellow for 2 weeks, and then the next one for 2 weeks, and so it goes round. How can churches grow if most people in the church, even the leaders and the teachers and the pastors and the elders, don't have Bibles? There's an urgent need for us to do all we can to get Bibles to these people. Now, you're aware that I send English language Bibles. People here don't know what to do with their own Bibles. Give them to me, I send them overseas. But it's really very inadequate. It's like a drop in a bucket. It's like a drop in the ocean, actually. It's so small. But it's better than nothing. And if people can read English, well, good on them. But what we really need is to get the Bible in their heart language. What are the present needs? Well, I've got a few statistics here. I don't know where these came from, and they may not mean a lot to you. Statistics change all the time. A lot depends on how people assess things or where the information comes from. But it seems that there are roughly in the world today about 12,000 people groups. Different ways of defining a people group, but it is an identifiable group of people with their subculture, language, way of life, so on. There are about 12,000 of these. In the world, there are also about 7,000 languages. Only about 300 of these languages have the full Bible. Just think of that. There are about 300 languages in the world where the full Bible is available. There are a further 700 languages where the New Testament is available. So that comes to about 1,000. There are a further 3,000 languages that have some of the Bible, maybe one or two of the Gospels or parts of the New Testament. So you put that all together, 300 plus 700 plus 3,000, you get up to about 4,000. That means there are still about 3,000 languages that have nothing. Now, one thing I haven't mentioned is that these statistics tell us there are about 1,000 languages that are satisfactorily bilingual. Now, by that I mean people live in an area where their first language may be this, but they have a second language which is almost as much a mother tongue as the first language. A lot of people are brought up to speak two languages or even three very fluently, so all of them are, in a sense, a kind of mother tongue. So there's a lot of overlapping, which means that we have to be careful when we use these statistics. Whichever way we look at it, if we're looking at 7,000 languages, we're coming down to somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 languages where people are still bereft of anything that they can read in a language that is close to their heart. One of the things that really annoys me is the self-indulgence of the English-speaking world. You go to a bookshop, a Christian bookshop, and you can find all kinds of versions and editions of the Bible. I went through my shelves a few years ago and I got rid of quite a lot. I found I had about 11 or 12 versions. I think I don't need all of these. So I got rid of half a dozen, sent them to somebody overseas and thought they might be useful. You wouldn't believe it, but over the next 12 months, one way or another, I got three more given to me. Another new version. Goodness me, why do we need all these new versions? Why do we need all these editions of the Bible? How to Be Happy Bible, a woman's Bible, a men's Bible, a wife's Bible, a teenager's Bible. Oh, it just goes on and on. And the main reason that all these versions of the Bible are put out is that they make money for the publishers. They're nearly all coming out of America, some of them coming out of Britain, but they're done because they make money. People will go along and buy a multicoloured Bible or a life application Bible or a How to Feel Happy on Sunday Bible and some other sort of Bible, and they're coming out wave after wave of them. And then you'll go to countries around the world and they cannot even get one edition of the Bible. The Nigerian friend that I've been referring to, on one occasion he said to me, "You people have so many versions. We cannot even get the verses." What a judgment the Western Church is building up for itself. What condemnation there must be upon Christians in our part of the world to spend so much money, so much energy, so much investment on something that is entirely self-indulgent, when the majority of Christians out there are struggling even to get the Word of God in their own language. And we in the West, we only constitute, 20 to 25% of the total number of born-again believers in the world. Something like 75 to 80% of them are out there in Africa and Asia and Latin America and other places. And in the majority of cases, they are in countries that are putting up with hardship of one kind or another. Many of them don't have Bibles. Another statistic that I got was that only 30% of the Christians in Africa, that is born again believers in churches in Africa, only about 30% own their own Bible. We've got to do something to try to correct this imbalance. And vernacular translations of the Bible would be high on my list of priorities in any consideration of Christian activity in these countries. I hope it is high on your list also. See what we can do to help these people get the Word of God in their heart language.